2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Inside Sources.
Inside Sources.
America's voice of reason. Boyd Matheson.
On Utah's home for elevated conversation.
Inside Sources on KSL News Radio.
Today, the Supreme Court issued a ruling on a longstanding case that challenged the Environmental Protection Agency's authority under the Clean Water Act. The ruling could have implications for communities and waterways across the country. So what was the case? What was the legal case? How'd the court rule, and how's this going to affect all of us? Always pleased to have joining us on the program Phil Rossetti, Senior Fellow for Energy and Environment at R Street Institute. Phil, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So for our listeners who have not been breathlessly following this, I've actually been following this case for a long, long time. I was actually in the Senate, I think, when this first started to bubble up. But for our listeners, just give a little sense of what was the case, which actually was in Idaho, and give us some sense of that.
Yeah. So, I mean, like you said, it's been a fun issue because it's really it goes back. It's also you know, a little bit novel. It's gone through a few different administrations. And this case in particular was related to someone in Idaho who bought a plot of land and he wanted to build a house and, you know, makes sense. But when he was starting to excavate, the land was adjacent to federally protected wetlands and he was ordered to stop by the EPA. So the court ruling that happened is a little bit interesting because it has to deal with the Clean Water Act, and specifically this thing we call the Waters of the United States, or WOTUS is what we call it in D.C. So WOTUS is got a lot of attention in 2015 because basically the Obama administration changed the definition to say that instead of it only being applicable to navigable waters and interstate waters, that would also apply to temporary bodies of water and anything that was within a certain distance of waters that were already regulated, and really broaden the scope. And the joke was kind of that the EPA could regulate puddles under that sort of definition. Not surprisingly, Trump rolled that back into a much narrower focus, and the Biden administration landed somewhere in the middle. In this case, what was interesting is both sides, the majority and the minority, said, you know, they thought that you know, they should have been able to build on this land in Idaho. But the key distinction of majority and why this is so significant is they said the EPA could not regulate waters unless it had a continuous connection, a continuous surface connection to waters that were already regulated. This dramatically narrows the authority of the EPA to regulate waters, and they can only do it to waters that are significant and interstate and follow a more traditional definition.
It is so interesting, and that temporary component to it, or that connective point, I think it was really the key to all of this. That I think you were not far wrong in terms of they could technically have been regulating puddles, you know, under the way it was being interpreted before. And so, as you look at how that played out, obviously unanimous ruling there for the Idaho couple, and that's become a little more rare. We still know most of the cases are either a 9-0 or an 8-1, 7-2 kind of thing. The high profile ones are always the split decisions. But anything else we learned in the process in this particular case?
Yeah, I think what's really interesting from this is we've always relied on the EPA to sort of fill in the gaps between what Congress said, you need to regulate under the Clean Water Act, and the Congress never defined that. So with the Obama administration going one way, Trump going another, and Biden landing in the middle, and now is this kind of signal from the court that says, hey, you know, we can't keep doing this. We're going to say that this is the narrow definition of what can be regulated. And if Congress wants to step in and protect more of these wetlands, which traditionally would have been protected under past definitions, which is why Kavanaugh actually sided with the Democrats on this one. He said, you know, the old method would have protected these wetlands. So now the court is basically saying Congress has to step in and fill that gap because they're not going to let the EPA just write their own definition of it.
And I think that's the most important part is that if I think this is one more example of the court saying, okay, we're going to go this far. And then Congress, this is actually your job and we're not going to do your job for you once again.
Exactly. Exactly. And as you pointed out, though, it's really interesting is everyone said that the couple here in this case in Idaho, that they should have been allowed to build. So it's more about this kind of quirk of the law. I got to say, it's got to be really tough to just want to build a house and then get wrapped up in a big Supreme Court case that defines the entire regulatory structure of water protection at the federal level. So yeah, I bet they're happy that's finally over.
Yeah, I am sure they are, especially frustrating when you already own the land, right? So they had owned the land for quite some time before they decided to start building. And so then to have all of this come and to become knee-deep in the – well, more like eyeball-deep in the middle of this kind of battle just had to be, one, shocking and stunning to them that this was so complicated and would take so long to move. Are any other lessons that we're learning out of this whole case?
Yeah, well, I think the lesson here is the court is not going to continue to go along with what the EPA has done in the past. So if you look back during the Obama administration, regulations went into overdrive, and a big part of that was this old sort of idea called Chevron deference, which is looks like it might be on its way out, which was this idea that the regulators would be responsible for putting the meat on the bones of what Congress said. And now it's totally flipped. And I'm hoping that this might be a bit of a motivation for these discussions take place in Congress, which is much better equipped to hold hearings, hear from experts, and say, you know, this is the appropriate way of managing this. But the old way seems like it's not going to be the big way moving forward.
Yeah, and then in terms of the navigable waterways or the waters of the United States, we have interesting places here in the United States that are deserts, but are technically navigable waterways, or they were, you know, 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago. Any other impact that this will have in terms of the EPA's either interpretation or application to some of those things?
Yeah, well, those wouldn't be permitted to be regulated under this because it would have to be a continuous surface connection to a body of water that's already regulated. So if you've got a body of water that is no longer permanent, then that wouldn't it seems to me that wouldn't apply in these cases. But it's, yeah, you know, I think it's also important to keep in mind that this is still a significant environmental protection, and a lot of waters are already regulated at the state level, which is why this was kind of a big deal. Was it was taking a lot of the authority out of the hands of the states and putting it at the federal level.
Yeah, I think that's an important piece of the puzzle for sure. That most of this should be handled at the state level, not at the federal level. In terms of how you make sure that we are doing the right things in terms of the environment and water and all of those things, that's absolutely critical. It's how it's applied, who applies it or creates the rule, so who can be held accountable for it in the next election. And it's not a cubicle decision as opposed to a community or a country decision that needs to be made. Phil Rossetti, Senior Fellow of Energy and Environment at R Street Institute. Phil, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Again, that's Phil Rossetti, Senior Fellow for Energy and Environment at the R Street Institute. I know none of you got up this morning thinking about navigable waterways or the Clean Water Act, but these are important things. These ultimately come down to your rights on your land, things that you own, and what the government can and can't do by rule from an agency. So that's critical stuff. We'll be right back.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.